It'll probably start on a Friday. What will seem like an attack on America by terrorists or Russia. Driven by a well-oiled, well-armed, and multinational group of elites using alien technology that government's been hiding for 70 years. Like yourself, I'm a true believer. What I need is your expertise.
You said if I ever put the pieces together that you would confirm.
And have you?
I've seen something.
You're nearly there. You're close.
I can't do this alone.
Police us and spy on us. Tell us that makes us safer. We've never been in more danger.
Then do something about it, Mulder.
I have seen this before. You're on fire, believing that you're onto some truth, that you can save the world.
This is my life. This is everything I believe in.
You are on dangerous ground here.
I know what I'm doing.
We have a small problem.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio. Your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, Demon Hunter!
Yes, I have been binge-watching X-Files for the last 182 hours, I'm psyched!
I think most of our listeners have been binge-watching. Hey, special thanks to our homes, guys, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Are you guys listening? They want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. The SYL Project, thesylproject.com. Give some love today. Share some love, give some love. Everybody needs love, guys. TheSYLProject.com. Thanks, guys, for being... Oh, our buddies at Paranormal A, Canadian Broadcasting Network. Thanks, guys, for being very cool. Welcome back to studio on this amazing, historic night, Demon Hunter.
It's historic. It's wonderful. I've been waiting.
Yeah, and I've been waiting, too, and I'm really jazzed about it because we have been... without the X-Files for so long. And, you know, we've kept the X-Files spirit alive on this show.
We have.
For many years, going on 10 years, guys. And we cover everything in the sci-fi, genre, pretty much horror, real-life X-Files type stuff that Nathan and I go looking for. All kinds of stuff. Proud to do it. But tonight, and we've done this a couple times, tonight is premiere night of one of our favorite shows. Most beloved shows, Nathan. What's your favorite memory of the X-Files?
Oh, I kind of see, this is a hard one, Sean, because my favorite memory of the X-Files...
Not who came on the show.
No. My favorite memory of the X-Files is actually Gillian Anderson's appearance in Rolling Stone. Because she looked really good in Rolling Stone.
Didn't Gillian do Playboy 2?
She did... For Him magazine.
Right. But it wasn't Full Frontal. Right.
No. And that was a really good spread. But those pictures of her on the front of Rolling Stone and in Rolling Stone, those were good pictures, Sean.
On
they were really good
of
pictures.
The Rolling Stone. Right. Yeah, absolutely. But,
I think episode-wise, I go back, I got to say, one of my favorite episodes was episode 21 of the first season.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the introduction of Skinner.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Skinner.
And it was the return of the first monster of the week, Tombs.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was probably one of my favorite episodes of all time.
You know, I got to say, and a lot of people have said that now that the show's coming back, I love the beginning of the X-Files, like the early days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they got into the, like you said, the late night creature feature. Each week would be something dear. They did the one episode where it was like the cops, a cops episode. Remember that? And they were filming a cops episode, and then Mulder and Scully came into it, and yeah, that was.
And I gotta say, probably my second favorite was the Gary Shandling episode where they were going to make an X-Files movie, and Gary Shandling was going to play Mulder.
Yeah, that was good, man.
That was probably. Of all the funny episodes, that was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I think so, too. But, you know, a lot of people out there and a lot of new listeners tonight, guys. If you're just joining us for the first time, special thanks to all our friends on Twitter that have been sharing the post. We've been getting on the crazy train, guys, which is the premiere of the X-Files revival.
When 20th Century Fox recognizes you. You know you're doing something right.
You're doing something right. I've been putting the X on the studio windows, and Alien Bob, of course, that's here in the studio. I had to put my X-Files I Want to Believe shirt on him. He wanted to wear it. He wanted to wear it. But that's how we get down, guys. But if you're just joining us for the first time, like I was given a short show description, you should join us. We go live every Sunday night from 7 till 8 o'clock, and it's an hour segmented show, and we try to do it so around The Walking Dead, around The X-Files now, which we were talking about earlier. I don't remember it coming on this late.
No, and you know, I kind of got to think they already have it in mind, because I think it's going to overlap with Walking Dead.
I think so, too. And
Walking Dead being a 9 o'clock show, they don't want to compete with it. So they're starting it at 10 o'clock, so it rolls through at that time. So people will switch straight over from Walking Dead over to The X-Files.
Absolutely, brother. But I tell you what, without further ado, let's get this out of the way. We're so excited. We're so stoked. Tonight's guest. Huh? You ready for it?
Is?
You hear the music, guys. Tonight's guest in 1986, after graduating from the University of British Columbia with a bachelor's degree in theater, performance, and the arts. The following year, he snagged a supporting role in the Disney sci-fi mini-series Earth Star Voyager. Didn't know that, Nathan. And since then, he's worked on such shows as 21 Jump Street, The Beachcomers, MacGyver, The Outer Limits, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and of course, the show we all know and love, the smash hit, The X-Files. And, of course, The Lone Gunman. That's right.
Yes.
Mr. John Byers, or his real name, Bruce Harwood, stops by studio tonight, guys. He's going to tell us all about The X-Files on this, the epic, the historic premiere night of The X-Files revival. Right here, only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Mystifying Oracle Radio, your ghost man and demon hunter show. Listen to the music. Listen to the music, Nathan.
I'm listening.
You gotta love the score. You getting excited?
I'm starting to get tingles.
That's it, guys. Bruce Harwood joins us right here. I'm so excited. And over the years, we've had so many great guests on. I mean, from the X-Files. And guys, we got a real special treat for you tonight because, in fact, we have clips of some of the epic guests. If you're not part of the Shadow Nation, you should be. Go to www.ghosteddemon.com. Don't miss a beat, because every Sunday night we go live, we got something cool for you. Either it's a real-life werewolf man, or it's a lady that's possessed by Satan, or carrying an alien's baby, or, you know, Langley from The X-Files, or or Walking Dead stars, you name it, we got it. So you don't want to miss out on that, right?
I would say so, sir. I just have one question for you.
I don't have a question. Go ahead.
I have a question.
I don't have an answer.
You
have the question. I don't have the answer. Yeah.
I have one question for
you. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think I'm spooky?
I do. I actually think you are spooky. Spooky Mulder. Anyway.
I was watching, like I said, binge watching X-Files.
Yeah.
And I saw that one clip come up on an episode, and I thought to myself, that has to be my new tagline. It has to be,
You think I'm spooky?
Yes.
I need that.
Yeah. I like, you know, we had the Smoking Man on, of course, our good friend William B. Davis. Everybody loves him. Yeah, the Smoking
Wonderful
Man.
Water skier, folks.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, we're going to talk tonight, guys. We're going to play some clips, exclusive clips, that we got here on the show when we interviewed him. And, of course, you know, this has been the last couple of years, been following the X-Files coming back. And this
We knew, folks, before anyone knew.
Before
knew.
Anyone knew. And we clipped it for you guys, so you don't have to go back and listen to, you know, the whole archive if you don't want to. But
but go back and listen to the whole archive.
Yeah, 9 years worth, guys. You can download them. They're all free, you tight A's out there in the Shadow Nation. So you don't have to spend any money on getting that down, at least for today. At least for today, they're free. But
until we actually go so broke that, but because that's what will happen, Sean. We've only spent the last decade giving this stuff away.
Right, right. Well, we got a speedy show tonight. I mean, it's usually an hour segment, but we got so much stuff to cover. What do you say we go into the magical X Files of the G&D show?
And, woohoo!
Yeah, and pull off. Now, when did we have Dean Haglund on? Of course, Langley from the X-Files. When did we have him on? Was it been about a month
Dean
ago?
Dean Haglund came on the show on November. No, that would be Roswell. We see. Tom was last September.
Last September.
Tom Braidwood. So that would mean Dean was probably the end of September. Dean Haglund was probably around September.
God, time flies. But, it does. When we had Dean on, and you got to be so careful, just like tonight with Bruce. We've been in the biz a long time, and you get so excited, especially with something that is dear to your heart, something you know you love, like the X-Files. And Nathan and I have to check our questions at the beginning of the show because,
you don't want to be that Chris Farley sketch from Saturday Night Live where you're sitting there talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger saying, you remember that time you were in the Terminator?
It was cool.
And you lowered yourself down into the vat of hot metal? Yeah, that was cool.
That was epic. Yeah, that was a great SNL clip. We're gonna start the news segment, guys. Doing it like that, we're gonna reformat the show. It's time for a little bit of a change. Yeah, a little twerking.
Yes, everybody loves the drinking game, but sometimes it is time to renew things.
And guys, Nathan, are you in the chat? Are you monitoring tonight?
I am not monitoring the chat. Okay, guys, I should be, shouldn't I?
We will get into the chat during the guest segment, which, in case you guys were wondering, is 7:30 is when the guest comes on. But I encourage you to stay with us and hear some insider, never before heard scoop on the new X-Files revival coming up. And we got the clips from William B. Davis, the Smoking Man, Dean Haglund, and much more. So I don't know what else you guys would want if you just don't love to hear our voices. But yeah, that's what we got. But this first one, we had Dean on this show, and Dean's amazing. Amazing.
He is.
He's a born again Aussie, and he
said they don't flush.
Yeah, he did. I think it's a conspiracy. The truth is out there. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to the bottom of it. But he came on, and there's a big debate, Nathan, Shadow Nation, about, you know, because everybody knows that Fox has signed the X-Files for 6 episodes only.
Yeah, but you gotta figure.
We don't know.
This is a test, Sean. This is only a test.
We don't know.
In the event of a real X-Files episode takeover, you will be given proper information to continue watching.
Well, guys, we've been working on that, Nathan and I, and we've been trying to bring you the scoops on this, and we're going to play this episode for you, or just a little clip. And we were talking to Dean Haglund, Langley from the X-Files, and we ask him about, you know, the future of the X-Files. Here we go. You're coming back. Everybody's sitting on pins and needles. They want to know, oh my God, it's only for, is it 6 or 7 episodes?
They're doing 6, but the network is loving them so much.
Awesome.
That may be changing. That's all I know.
You don't know. Yeah. Oh, you heard it there first, guys. There's the bell. Another spoiler. Anyway, brother, it's coming back. What did you feel like when they called you and said, hey, dude, guess what? What was it feeling?
Well, you know, there's some trepidation at first because when the 90s were happening, the X-Files, nobody was into ghost hunting and Ghostman and Demon Hunter didn't exist.
Right.
You know, all of these unusual plots, you know, of UFOs and weird paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
And now that's in such the popular culture, every time I turn on the History Channel, there's another show about that sort of thing, and there's ghost hunter shows left, right, and center,
yeah,
that, you know, what can the X-Files do to go back to being this sort of unusual themed show? I'm glad to say I read the script, and it's and Chris has got his head on, he's got his head on that one for sure.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So I was worried at first, what are they going to talk about? And in fact, as Chris said, it's just, you know, it's the same show, just with a 13-year commercial break.
And now these words from our sponsors, 13 years later.
Yeah, exactly. 13 years later, mm-hmm. Now we're back.
Oh, dude.
And then, but yeah, so I was trepidatious, read the script, and I thought, oh, okay, great. Like, you know, it has to happen. And they flew us out, and literally talking, I don't know if Tom said this, but we were sitting on set, and I looked at him, and I said, this is like, I didn't cross the international dateline. I flew back 20 years in time.
There you go, guys. Of course, that was Dean Haglund on our show not too long ago, Langley from The X-Files, talking about the future of The X-Files Revisited, man.
And I really think, Sean, the scariest thing that I've seen so far is Langley with short hair.
His ears, man. The ears, yeah. Langley.
Had his ears raised, like, all the way up to his forehead. It was insane.
Dean,
it was hidden under Langley's hair.
Dean will hear it first. Yeah. Because those big chunks.
So obviously he read the script, Sean, so we can expect to see Dean in The X-Files.
Well, you know, he definitely confirmed that he will be in The X-Files. He didn't confirm how many episodes or anything. And he said, and I think he kind of got carried away while we was rocking and rolling with the show, because he said, you know, well, the 6 episodes, that's probably going to change. I don't know. So he kind of had to pull that back. You know, you got to have
think, Do you think they're going to make him wear a wig so he still looks like Langley?
God, they should. God, they should. Wayne's World, man. Wayne's World. Nathan and I know Dean, guys, and if you've never met Dean Haglund as a man, not just an actor, he's amazing. I mean, he's your everyday run-of-the-mill guy.
It must be something they put up in that water in Canada, Sean.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, we're kind of theming around the whole X-Files thing tonight. I know we got strange news and everything, but I figured since this is premiere night, you know, we could rock it to it. And I got this story, though, Nathan, and it's really just something for us to talk about, and it has to do with the X-Files. X-Files creator, I put this on our Facebook page and Twitter earlier this week, the X-Files creator, of course, Chris Carter, says, I thought the FBI was going to shut me down. Did you read any of this?
I just started reading it this evening, yes.
Yeah, here we go. Alien conspiracies, monsters, cryptids, mutants, paranormal phenomena. Just a typical day for the fictional FBI agents of the X-Files. But how close to fiction was it? Big question there, guys. How close was it? Truth is stranger than fiction, huh? Anyway, the creator and writer and director, Chris Carter, tells the real-life tale about the show in its early days that's worthy of the show's catchphrase, the truth is out there. Yeah.
Was that I'm good? Ready. I'm ready for the truth.
Here we go.
Give it to me, Sean. Give me the truth.
Gimme. I had someone come up to me during the original run of the series who said they worked in some high place in the secret government agency and said that we are very close to the truth. That's what Carter told our friends over at the Huffington Post. Thanks, guys, for the story anyway. He says, I didn't know whether to take that person at their word or not. I can tell you this. When I wrote the 1993 pilot, I called the FBI to do some research, and they were nice enough, but didn't really give me the time of day. Then, all of a sudden, as we got closer to airing, the FBI called Carter and said, who are you and what are you doing? And for a second, I thought it was going to be a long arm of the law coming in to shut me down type scenario. The science fiction classic returns to TV this weekend after a 14-year absence, and Carter tells HuffPost weird news that the feds eventually took a liking to him, and now he took a liking to them. They became unofficial fans of the X-Files, and as a member of the FBI's Citizens Academy. See, Carter's inside now. He's a member of the FBI's Citizens Academy, guys. That's a story within itself. The creator, the director of the X-Files, is in with the FBI. Anyway, he's had a chance to shoot many a firearm with the FBI. I got to shoot a few rounds at the firing range in FBI headquarters in Washington, guys. And thanks, Huffington Post, for that story. But I thought that was very intriguing, don't you?
Yes, I do. I mean, but, you know, you have to wonder, we've talked to many a person regarding conspiracy theories, UFOs, you know, government cover-ups.
Yeah.
And they talk all the time about how people just show up at their door. Now, when they're writing these stories, you got to figure they're getting the ideas, the information and stuff from some people who might be among these people who are getting the knocks on their door, doing the cover-ups, all that stuff. So they might be worried that they might actually get some information they don't want out there to put on the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
You know, the government's only got our best interest out. They're looking out for our best interest, Sean. They certainly wouldn't do anything to hide any information that we should have.
Zing! Woo! That was a great one, man. Need to do stand up. Anyway, you know, guys, talking about that on the show, if you're a first-time listener, I hope you stay with us for the years to come, because we just keep going up that ladder. We had the TV show on A&E, Extreme Paranormal, where we actually went out and looked for, you know, cold cases of ghosts and stuff like that. So check that out. You can get it on YouTube. Still play on Bio, Extreme Paranormal on A&E.
Yeah, that's amazing. I got to watch it this year. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. But, you know, so we've been on the road before. We got a couple things up our sleeves still. But we love doing this for you every Sunday night. So support us. Make sure to go to our Twitter page and our Facebook and join us today. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, man. Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Just look it up. Anywhere you can find, subscribe, like, and share your comments below on the YouTube. Let us know what you think of the show, even if you hate it. I don't know how you would.
Hey, and if you go to our webpage at www.ghostanddemon.com, that's ghostanddemon.com, you can find all our links to all our Twitters, our Facebook, all that fun stuff. So just go there, click on, and if you only like Sean, you don't like me, you can find his Facebook page,
you
not
can.
Mine.
Yeah.
It's, you don't have to like me if you don't want to. But hey, Sean, did you know that when they first started doing the reboot of the new X-Files movie, CNN reported Gillian Anderson reports, "I was offered less pay for the X-Files reboot."
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, when it comes to wage distribution between men and women in Hollywood, not even FBI's most famous paranormal investigators are immune.
Okay.
X-File co-star Gillian Anderson, who plays Agent Dana Scully, has been drawing attention to the gender gap in pay in interviews leading up to this Sunday's premiere. It's the X-Files.
Trailblazer.
In an interview with the Hollywood Reporter,
yeah,
she said she was offered half what she wanted to the offer. No, she was offered half of what she wanted to offer. Co-star David Duchovny, who plays Agent Fox Mulder, to participate in the reboot. So they offered him double. Okay.
No, there you go.
Sources told Hollywood Reporter that Anderson and Duchovny ultimately received equal pay. Mm-hmm. Still, Anderson said it was galling, given that she had fought this battle before during the series' first run.
Oh, man, that's rough. That's rough.
So, that comes from CNN, folks. If you want more of that story, you can go to CNN.com.
Absolutely.
Just type in Gillian Anderson, because I type in Gillian Anderson all the time to see that old Rolling Stone.
Easy.
Sorry.
No, guys.
Sorry, that red dress and the Creature from the Black Lagoon picture. Oh, my God,
right,
Sean.
Right. I know. It's amazing. But, hey, we're coming down to the five-minute mark until we have to take a break and play our independent band and do all the da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, the scheduled stuff. But, guys, we had three more clips for you from, of course, the classic gentleman, the William B. Davis, or as you know him as the Smoking Man from the Smash series, The X-Files. And a lot of questions, Nathan.
Yeah,
about William. Like, you know, at the end of the promotional trailer that we just played, the teaser, we have a problem.
Yeah. Is that a flashback, or is that going to be something going on in the series?
I don't know, Nathan, but you asked him during the interview, guys, so hold on to your hats. William B. Davis answers the question. Here we go.
The death in X-Files, you were so beloved in X-Files. And
people,
and your death was so, like, they never found the body. So
which death are they referring to?
The missile launch down in Mexico.
Yes, right. Okay. Exactly.
They never found the body. And people are still saying, and I believe in a few of the comic books, the cigarette smoking man reemerges after that.
Oh.
So my question is, there's always talk about a new movie.
Yes.
If it occurs, would the cigarette smoking man, would CGB Spander actually show up?
It's curious, and I don't know what's going to happen. There now is quite a bit of talk about a television series.
Yes.
Maybe you may have heard. And perhaps a mini series. And I'm not sure what form it would take. And I don't know. I have no idea how they would set it. Because if they go on in time, you know, and run it continuously from the end of the series, you know, then we've got Mulder and Scully with a weird baby. We've got me dead. I mean, most of the elements that we want, the sexual tension between Mulder and Scully and the cigarette-smoking man manipulating things in the background, they're all gone. So I'm wondering if they really do the TV show, they'll actually go back in time and kind of redo a whole sequence of events that happen while Mulder and Scully, before they've got together, before I've died, and so on. Of course, yeah. That's what I hope, because I'd love to be in it, but I don't know what they're thinking. I have no idea.
Well, it's going to happen it's blown up. Somebody's dropped the ball, and it's going nuts right now because they're saying this is definitely going to happen. Of course, the internet never lies, but
right.
You know, they're saying this is going to happen.
It's interesting what you said about my death, because I just kind of assumed that it was clear that at that time I couldn't have survived. But yeah, maybe I stepped to one side and the missile just went past me. It's
see?
Possible.
See?
But then I still, if I come back, I'm still the old guy with the tracheotomy, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd really rather be the guy with the suit.
Unless, of course, the aliens
Fix
you up.
Good possibility. They could. That's everything's possible.
There you go.
Let's go into the writer's studio, Nathan. We're bringing you back. We're bringing you back, William. That's it.
Give your friends over at the X-Files a call for us, will you, William? We need to be in there writing for you.
Yeah, right. Okay. There you go, guys. Of course, William B. Davis, Smokey Man from the X-Files, was here on the show.
And you know what I noticed about that interview, Sean?
Hmm.
Two things. One, obviously, William B. Davis called up the folks and said, I have this great idea. The aliens bring me back.
Yeah,
and
right after
that. He's going to be back. Yeah, it stole our idea. And two, when I get excited, when we're interviewing someone and I get excited, my voice goes up. I just noticed that. All those years of broadcasting school just thrown out the window.
You know, I had two more clips, guys, from the epic interview we did with William. But unfortunately, we're at 7:29. We got to bring in Bruce tonight. We got to take our commercial break, pay all the bills. So we'll have to get that later. But remember, I want to remind you, you can go to YouTube or you can go to iTunes and look up the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, and it'll bring up our years of archives that you can listen to the whole thing and just look up William B. Davis. And
Or just go to our webpage at www.ghostanddemon.com and you can find all our archives right from there.
That's right. Did we get the website out enough for our Xbox?
I don't know. www.ghostanddemon.com.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. You're so epic. You're so subtle there, my friend.
I try to slip it in when no one's noticing.
Yeah. Anyway, guys.
Ghostanddemon.com.
We got to get ready to go to break, but tonight's guest, Mr. Bruce Harwood, John Byers from the hit series The X-Files and The Lone Gunman. The X-Files, which comes back tonight at 10 p.m., that's Eastern Time, guys, on Fox. You don't want to miss that, so stay tuned for the big man, The Lone Gunman. He was the leader, kind of, you know, John Byers. He was kind of the leader of that group, I think. Was there a leader, you think? I don't know, Nathan. Anyway, guys, we got to go to a commercial break. And if you don't know how we do it, how we get down on this show, each week we play a new band, an independent band. We support the little man on this show. Don't we, Nathan?
We do. And I'm sorry, I clicked the wrong button there, Sean. You couldn't hear me say that. I think if there was a leader, it was him. He held the group together. He grounded the group in... Well. And how well you can ground a group when you're a group that believes in alien abductions and government conspiracies, you know, you don't know. But he grounded them in a way. It was the tie. I think it was the tie that grounded them.
It was. It was a beautiful tie. Anyway, guys, we're going to go to break. Tonight's band, The Columbines, named the song The Devil's Crossing Me. Shadow Nation, Nathan.
Ghostman.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Hey, this is Tom Breedwood, a.k.a. Froliki from The X-Files. You're listening to The Ghost Man and Dima Hunter Show. Enjoy it, because I know I do.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Since a young age, tonight's guest has been climbing the acting totem pole to the very tippy top. In 1986, he graduated from the University of the British Columbia with a degree in theater. Since then, guys, he's been tearing up the big screen and your television boom tube with such films and such features like Earth Star Voyager, The Beachcomers, MacGyver, The Outer Limits, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and so much more, guys, I can't mention. But of course, the cult classic, the smash hit, The X-Files, The Lone Gunman, and much, much more. Shadow Nation and newcomers around the world, X-Files fans, please help us welcome to studio Mr. Bruce Harwood, John Byers from The X-Files. Bruce, how you doing,
Hello.
Buddy?
Hi there. I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Outstanding, sir. Outstanding. What time is it there? What time is it there?
It is 4:30 here.
4:30.
On the West Coast.
I was worried about that, because I never know where you guys are at, but it seems like most of the X-Files cast are Canadian, or from the British.
Well, the gunmen are, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, all of them. Of course, we had your pal, Dean Haglund, on last week, which he's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's been about a month ago, but he's a born-again Aussie. He was out in Australia.
Well, he's been all over. He was a born-again American, and now he's a born-again Aussie.
It was funny when we had Dean on, we told him that we'd had Tom on earlier in the month, and he said, how the heck did you get him on? He lives in like a cabin in the mountains with no phone or internet. We were like, well, we pretty much had to ship him a satellite phone. And
Pretty much. He loves it, though. I've never seen the place, but he loves to just disappear there for weeks at a time.
Bruce, I got to tell you, all your fans around the world, X-Files lovers, are in-house tonight. They're listening, and everybody's on pins and needles. They're so excited. Big night tonight. Big night,
yeah,
Bruce.
I know. Likewise. I mean, when we were talking about the time change, you kept saying you were going to call me at 7:30.
Yeah.
Well, 7 o'clock is when the show comes on over here, so I was thinking to myself, no, you can't call me then. You can't call me then. I'm watching the show.
Yeah. A lot of people wouldn't be tuning in right now if it was on at 10 o'clock Eastern or 7 o'clock.
Yeah. I wouldn't be tuning in right now. That's
It'd be a lonely show without you guys here.
We were just discussing among ourselves the conspiracy of timing on television. A 10 o'clock show Eastern time seems awful late to be bringing in something everybody's waiting for. What do you think the reasons are for bringing it on so late in the evening?
Oh, there's no conspiracy. Sports, man. it's sports. I don't care how popular the show is. Sports trumps X-Files every time.
Yeah,
especially on Fox.
We were kind of wondering if, since it's going to overlap with, The Walking Dead, which airs at 9, if they didn't want to steal or compete against a group of people who would be viewers of both shows.
So when does Walking Dead come back?
In February.
In February. Oh, well, it'll barely overlap, won't it?
Yeah. It'll probably overlap for about 2 episodes. Yeah.
That's going to be crazy because my wife loves that show.
I hear HD recorders keying up across the nation right
now.
Oh,
yeah.
Across the world, man. Thank God for technology. But, Bruce, we've had a lot of your cast members on. Dean Haglund, Tom Braidwood, of course, the smoking man, William B. Davis.
Yes.
And we were playing clips before you came on, and they were talking about, and we know the biz. You can't talk about what's coming up. But we had little clips of him, Nathan was trying to tell, he was working hard on it. we don't try to get information because we know how serious that is. But William was on, and Nathan had brought up a good point, said, we want you back in the series. Is there, any possibility? Of course, we covered why I blew up and the missile, and everything. And he did make a little comment, but it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? And then he went into, maybe I stepped to the right when the missile went off. And then, of course, in the...
He's so full of cancer that it just bounced off him at the last moment.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
they grew a new smoking man out of a cancer cell. He's the new cancer man.
Yeah.
See, The truth is out there. But Bruce, we got you on tonight, and it's epic, brother. Thanks so much for coming by on premiere night. We know you're excited. You got things going on.
Oh, and, yeah.
Of course, the big premiere tonight. I wanted to get in for our listeners around the world. Tell us something about yourself besides, you know, Mr. Byers from the X-Files, what a lot of people know. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in all that good stuff.
Oh, well, I mean, just acting or the X-Files or in general or...
Let's cover it all.
I don't know if it's not too complicated. I've always wanted to be an actor since I was a little tiny kid.
Yeah.
I think my earliest memory is acting in a grade 3 school play or something like that. And I thought this was awesome, you know. And I'd made plenty of plans when I was growing up that, I'm not going to be an actor because they don't make any money. I'll be a lawyer or I'll be something else. And then when I got to university, I just slid on into the theater program they had there and ended up getting a BFA in theater. And then the first job I got when I graduated was this Disney TV show called, it was supposed to be a pilot for a series called Earthstar Voyager. I guarantee none of you have heard of it because nothing ever happened to it.
Yeah.
But it was a 4-hour sort of mini series that was supposed to air over 2 days. Apparently got some of the worst ratings a Disney program ever did.
Oh.
So that was no good, but that got me into the business, and I've just been acting in television, mostly television that shot in Vancouver ever since then.
Right. Now, what age were you when you went to Disney?
That was when I just graduated, so I was like, 22, 23, something like that. I was playing a 17-year-old or something. I looked pretty young.
Yeah. But you still look young. But and that's a good thing. I look young, too. I got that baby face. So that means when I'm 80,
yeah,
I'll look, 78.
Well, my hair is gone. My beard has gone white. So
yeah,
I probably look closer to my age. If I were to shave it off, I could probably drop about 15 years or something like that.
I keep telling people that, too. It's I tried dyeing my beard the other day. It just absorbed the dye and it stayed gray.
Father Time said, no way, guys.
But hey, it's interesting because when you mentioned Earthstar Voyager, I have the Google board, so I bring it up. And you bring it up and you see all these people loving it. You see all these other people wanting to see that it didn't. And then, of course, you have the person down here going, why does Disney hate Earthstar Voyager?
Yeah.
And
I think you can find the opening credits on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or at least I did once.
But, again, a show like that comes out. When Sean and I have worked in television, and you get that gig, and it comes up, and I'm sure they're telling you this is going to be awesome, this is going to be great, you're figuring this is going to be the next few years of your life, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Well, actually, in that case, I never got that vibe from that show. I think it was like one of those things that it gets started out with plenty of promise, and then by the time they actually got the shooting, everyone had already given up on it. I don't really know. I was so new to the business, I really didn't understand 80 to 90% of what was going on, you know. I was just learning things like, I have to stand on this little green spot here before I say my line. That was sort of, it was all brand new to me. You don't teach you that in theater. They don't say, you know, when you walk on stage, you must stand at a certain spot.
Right.
So that was, my mind was full of learning the basics at that point. It never occurred to me that to think about, my future and all that nonsense. I just let me get through this day.
I remember the first episode I ever did for anything on television, and I had gone to theater school. And when a line got blown, I just kept going and ad-libbed and brought it back around. And they looked at you and went, stop, you know, what are you doing?
It depends on which show you're on. Sometimes they'll let it go. I mean, depending on the director and stuff like that. But, you know, science fiction in the future, people don't blow lines and improvise, and their hair is always perfect, and nobody wears glasses and things like that.
That's because of the chip in their head.
Yeah, or whatever it is that's making them perfect. I've noticed that about science fiction. I'd like the woman, the makeup artist who was working on me, I think used half a can of hairspray to keep my hair in place. Just because it's the future, and you can't have a lock of hair out of place.
What you didn't know was she was also the hairstylist for Ronald Reagan. So
yeah, actually, she worked on Sean Connery, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Sean Connery.
Same deal.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bruce, being John Byers, a very interesting character, kind of comedy relief, but also serious at the same time. A smash hit, The X-Files, of course. Then the spinoff of that, The Lone Gunman, which still should be on, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Oh, dude, I loved it. Loved it to death. Oh. The world loved it. But the, you know, MacGyver, The Outer Limits, The Dead Zone. I know you've done a lot of different things, but it seems that the supernatural conspiracy stuff has followed you. When you were growing up, was there an interest? Was there a favorite show that got you involved in that kind of stuff?
You know, I never, there wasn't really a lot of stuff on that I can remember watching. We all watched Star Trek, of course, but that was all reruns by the, by the time I was aware of it. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s, and there wasn't really any sort of, I think the most, I guess Fantasy Island wasn't a supernatural show, was it?
Kinda.
it kinda was. Yeah. You know, especially when they remade it years later with Malcolm McDowell, you know?
Well, that,
yeah.
A lot of people
I am very fond of a British, again, this is all, it was all in reruns, the shows I saw that I liked. Like, you guys know The Prisoner, the British series from 68?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's my favorite TV show, and that is more of a science fiction thing than supernatural stuff.
Right.
So, no, I mean, when you're young, you always read ghost stories, and you get excited, you know, horror stories. It's sort of things that teenagers like to read, science fiction and horror and fantasy and things like that. And then you either, most people, I guess, grow out of it when you get to, you know, your 20s, or you just get more into it. And I kind of grew out of it.
Right.
But the fact that I ended up on all these supernatural or science fiction TV shows was more a function of what gets shot in Vancouver. Since it's always cheaper to shoot here, and we've got some great exterior locations, or you know, you can shoot on a snow-capped mountain in the morning and then drive down to a farmer's field for the afternoon or something like that. Mm-hmm. It gives since science fiction shows usually have a lot of settings, different settings. It was easier than driving around Los Angeles for hours and hours and hours just to get something that looks a little different.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be, and this isn't easier by far, because acting, my hat's off to you guys, because when Nathan and I went from, you know, blue-collar work, which is what we still do, and broadcasting because we love to do it, and all of a sudden, you know, Hollywood calls and says, hey, you guys really got something. You're funny here. Let's do a TV show. You know, our head was spinning. You know how fast that stuff happens. And the contracts are coming. They're wanting to change how you do everything. They signed us, said, we're signing you because you're funny. Sign here. We signed. They said, okay, stop being funny. Because so you know how they change everything, but you know where your next check's coming from. They were looking at, you know, I have a full-time job with the insurance and everything, and Hollywood was just like, if we get picked up for another, you know, 8 episodes, you might want to quit your job. And I'm thinking, I have kids, you know. But in Canada, do they have a better base structure for actors? Of course, the unions.
Oh, no. Insurance. Oh, no, no. Oh, goodness me, no.
Oh, wow.
No, the actors are cheaper. Definitely, you get paid less in Canada than you do in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
We have a thing. I don't want to get too technical, but instead of getting residuals, we have what's called a buyout, where they basically pay you a percentage of your pay right up front, and it covers your usage for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So you get a nice whacking check and then nothing. as opposed to residuals, which sort of trickle in, you know, over the years if the show is successful.
Yeah. Sounds like kind of what we did, Nathan.
It sounds like what we were kind of talked into. We must have had Canadian producers.
Yeah, we must have. Yes. But, you know... No, it's so beautiful in Canada. I can see why the X-Files shoots over there, plus the cost of overhead's probably much lower and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, you probably heard what Chris Carter said, is that Vancouver gave the X-Files free atmosphere.
Right.
And when they moved to Los Angeles in season 6, they weren't really, I think, fully appreciative of how much atmosphere Vancouver gave to the show until they moved to Los Angeles and they discovered that they, you know, in Vancouver, we're doing a dark, murky scene in this forest, and there's mist on the ground, and, well, we'll just go and shoot there. And as soon as you try and do that in Los Angeles, you have to bring out umpteen smoke machines and keep them pumping all night, you know.
Right.
So there's certainly a quality that Vancouver gave to the show. I can't remember where I'm going with this. But
that's okay. It's ADD Radio on our show. You don't have to go anywhere.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I remember watching just recently the episode that took place in the first season where it's supposed to be in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm watching going, I'm from New Jersey, and that's not New Jersey.
Yeah. Was that the Jersey Devil?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't they supposed to be in Atlantic City at some point?
Yes. And I'm watching
going.
Yeah,
I remember.
I used to camp in the Pine Barrens, and... Yeah. And that's not the Pine Barrens.
Well, you know, it's funny. That was the very first episode of the show I ever watched all the way through, aside from EBE, the episode that the gunman first appeared in. And so I was like, I had not been watching the show at the time. I had no interest in seeing the show. I'd only heard about the premise. My agent said to me, oh, it's about FBI agents chasing aliens. And I went, that sounds really dumb. and I happened to flip on, the first episode was like, the Jersey Devil, I'll watch this. And I was like, for one thing, that doesn't look like the right area, and this seems kind of dumb. So I never really did get into the show until the second season. So for someone who appeared on it, I was not an early adopter. Mm. It wasn't until I got called back to play the same character again that I actually began to watch the show, and then... Yeah, then I became a fan of it. But that was the second season, which I think was probably slightly better than the first season overall.
And I always found it interesting talking to all the different X-Files alums, they talked about how their character was supposed to be like a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
You know, the Smoking Man was supposed to appear in like one, maybe two episodes.
Yeah.
And he became the iconic villain.
Yeah.
The man you love to hate for the entire series.
Yeah.
And you guys were supposed to be a one-time episode. And that just shows you how the fans react and the writers go, we got to put them back in.
Yeah. I think also, I mean, thank you for the fans for being so excited. And also knowing that this was, it was a time when the internet, sort of internet comment on shows was taking off and the X-Files writers and producers were taking full advantage of that. I do think too that Glenn Morgan and James Wong who invented our characters wanted to try us again once or twice more, just because they felt that our first appearance they hadn't quite sort of nailed what we were as characters, and we're fairly harmless to bring back once or twice since it was established that Mulder had already knew us. And then and then at that point it did sort of take off and become a thing for the whole show.
That's interesting. How did the auditions come about for the X-Files? How did that
all
start?
My story is really boring. Dean has a story about doing umpteen auditions with different people, and Tom, of course, I mean, he must have told you the story of being walking out of the bathroom basically and being accosted by the director to take the part.
Fro Hickey was drunk. He told us he's a huge beer drinker. We love that. We talked about beer for 15 minutes. So,
For me, I just went to the audition. I didn't expect to get the part because the script called for a clean-shaven man, and I'd just grown my beard. So I went with the sort of attitude like, well, I'll do the best I can, but I'm not going to get it. And then they gave it to me anyway. And I went, the next thing I knew, it was the day of the job, and I went in. I worked half a day. We wrapped before lunch, which was great because I got to get out of my costume, have a free lunch, and then go home and have the whole afternoon to myself. And that was really my main impression of the show. Yeah. Except I thought the two lead actors were no good.
That's awesome.
Because they're not trying at all. They're half asleep. What are they? He's not even moving his face. I got it completely wrong.
Yeah.
So
that brings me to a two-part question here. I have one from your character's point of view. Do you think that Mulder was the reason the X-Files kept getting pushed away because he was so outspoken about them and never tried to, just tone it down so that his theories would be accepted? He's the one that actually forced everybody into kind of like not paying attention to him, writing him off.
from my character's perspective, I would say that John Byers admired Mulder for being as brave as he was and being as outspoken as he was on these theories and things like this. That Byers was initially we were written as characters that kind of mocked him for being a little crazy, mm-hmm. but as we it kept coming back, it was more obvious that hero worshipped Mulder for being the brave guy who actually went out and did things and, you know, got hands on, as it were, while we stayed in our basement and, you know, formatted our newspaper for the month or the week or however often we published it.
As time went on, I kind of got that hero worship sense and always kind of thought that John dressed the way he did because he wanted to be Mulder.
I think I thought that too at first, but then when we did the episode Unusual Suspects in season 5, it turns out he dressed like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a way of keeping order in the end, in a world where things didn't seem always to make sense. Well, at least I can dress well, you know, yeah. and get up and put a tie on and, you know, put my beard hair and trim my nails and be tidy.
Well, as a lot of people will remember, Bruce, you guys swapped clothes to sneak Mulder out of the hospital in the first X-Files movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
If it wasn't for you, he'd be dead.
Yeah, and isn't it nice to know that me and David Duchovny are exactly the same size?
It's wonderful. You didn't even see his sleeves roll up or something.
The shoulders were perfect. It was great.
So here's the second part of that question. Was John the leader of the Lone Gunman?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yeah.
We should add Dean on to argue.
Even in the series, it was always be like Langley and Froehlich would be arguing, and then it started to get kind of funny to me anyway. They'd have an argument, and then they'd turn to me, and I'd get up and say one thing like, it's what we have to do, and that would basically be it. So that kind of amused me, because I think I was the foreman of the group, and that I would stand and supervise while they did all the work.
Yeah. You would direct them.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why I wore the suit. I think it was a power suit that it had its influence over them, because there they are in T-shirts and whatever the heck Froehlich wears. So I had that kind of status.
Whatever he wears, blue jeans and that leather jacket.
Well, he also has a kind of vest that was made out of a dead sheep or something like that.
It was still rotting while he was wearing it.
Yeah, it was. It certainly looked like it.
He looked like a
first
dirty
time
little
we saw
man.
It. They put him on him in season. Oh, was it Paperclip? Was the episode they put him on it the first time? We were all like, "What did you kill?" Because it looked really awful.
Yeah, but you know, and Bruce, I know we're running out of time, and if you have a little bit of time, we want to do the top 10 conspiracy questions. What we do is we play Jeopardy music. And we start the clock, and you have 60 seconds, and I run down the list, you know, Roswell, moon landing, stuff like that, conspiracies, and you just say, yes, it happened, or no. And then you can throw in some. You want to do that? You want to play that quick game tonight?
Yeah, let's try it.
I just have to ask you one thing, Bruce. During this kind of goes back to one of our previous guests.
Yeah.
Who was the cigarette-smoking man trying to kill after his book was published?
Oh, he was going to, I think he was going to shoot Froehlich, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Froehlich.
Yeah. We never got to ask, we never got to ask Tom that, so I figured I'd
ask. Oh, okay. Well, there's some weird background story. Yeah, I know, there was a strange thing.
Because when I watched the episode, I thought he was going to be killing you.
Oh, no, he was going to kill Froehlich, because Froehlich was the one who was telling the story.
Yep.
Yeah.
And because you were the leader of the group, I always thought, oh, he's going to kill him. He's going to.
No.
Right. Okay, all right. I tell you what, Bruce, are you ready for the top 10 conspiracy theories, true or not? True or false?
All right.
Crack your fingers, get your soda pop ready or your favorite drink.
Wait, if I get it right, do I win something? Is that the idea?
Well, we told Dean we'd give you a toaster.
We will ship you an American beer, which you won't want to drink anyway.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah, he lives in Canada. You think he's really going to want
where the beer is better.
Yeah.
So we just have more alcohol in ours, that's all.
Okay.
You guys got to man up. You know?
I can't do it. I can't. We told Dean, he's got Foster's.
I got to say, I am a fan of Labatt's Max.
That's like the American of Canadian beers.
I know, but the Labatt's Max is terrible. The American version of it with the Canadian alcohol.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's terrible. Okay, here we go, guys. The G&D show, a top 10 conspiracy theories with Bruce Harwood from The X-Files. Here we go. Start the clock, Nathan.
It's starting now.
Okay, and I'm waiting on my clock to start over here so it'll be official. Yeah. There we go. There is the music. Number one, Roswell.
Didn't happen.
Moon landing.
Happened.
Number three, reptilians control the government.
Oh, not true.
Four, one world order Illuminati.
No.
Fluoride in the water's killing us all.
Don't know.
Number six, alien hybrids walk among us.
No.
Number seven, JFK was an inside job.
Could be.
Number eight, 9/11 was an inside job.
No.
Okay. Number nine, Men in Black are real.
Maybe.
And 10, time travel has happened.
No.
No, he did it. He answered.
He did it. The first one to actually not try and explain the answers. Well, he went so he answered them all. That's wonderful.
We didn't even hear the buzzer. You did it, Bruce. You did it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Let's go into detail a little bit about him. You said Roswell. True or false? What was it?
Yeah, false.
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 Oh, my
you
God.
Know what? And you want to get into that crazy thing?
Yes.
It was an experimental whatsamahooey from the Air Force that went down. The problem was the Air Force didn't know what the hell they had on their own hands. Yeah. And there were guys in the Air Force who thought they were dealing with aliens and saying, we have to run around and hush this up. And by the time they realized, no, it's not aliens, everybody was wondering, why is the Air Force trying to hush this up? They screwed themselves by being idiots.
Oh, I like that answer.
I do, too. Air Force was dumbs back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Anyway, moon landing.
They're a lot dumber than we think they are, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I've actually heard that explanation combined with the fact that we had stolen parts, the information from, like, Russian satellites, and that's why they didn't want the information to get out, or Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, moon landing.
Oh, that's just dumb. Thinking it didn't happen?
Yeah.
That's just crazy dumb.
That's what
I think. It makes no sense as a conspiracy, for one thing.
It doesn't. It happened in the studio. Come on. I remember when Buzz was doing the tours and stuff, there was people that would come up to him and, you know, get him all mad, saying, no, you're trying to start a radio show.
Didn't he punch somebody? Because
he did. Well, wouldn't you?
Well, that's... Now, if that is if punching somebody in the face isn't a cover-up, I don't know what is.
That's it. Okay, number three, the reptilians are controlling the government. You said no.
Oh, so, well, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who puts this out. He's a Brit.
I know. He
lectures to, like, crowds and crowds of people. It's just like, it's like taking a really awesome science fiction novel and turning, you know, and turning it into something else. I have no words for that theory. It's so strange.
And Sean, I've told you, as a Mason, I can tell you it's not true. It's not true. All hail the subterranean reptilian overlords.
Well, clearly you and Bruce are both reptilian, and you're not going to tell me the truth or the shadow.
I'd say watch out for the D-Rose. That's much more dangerous.
What's the D-Rose?
What is it? D-Rose are, I'm trying to remember what it means. It's robots who live at the center of the Earth and manipulate human beings through mind control.
Oh, my God, I've never heard that.
That's been around a lot. Well, that theory's been around a lot longer than the laser, lizard people. And it's much more frightening.
Haven't you seen the YouTube videos with Bush's face turning, morphing live on
air? Didn't you see the New Jersey overpass sign that had they accidentally put the truth up there when it said lizard warning this week?
Yes, because that's how stupid they are. They accidentally put up signs that tell the truth.
Yes.
Yeah, there'll be a book out of that. Okay, One World Order Illuminati, you said no.
Nah.
Okay.
That Davos, one I can maybe, guarantee you it's not...
Not Illuminati, true. But possibly Davos.
Davos,
that's it. Fluoride in the water's killing us. Everybody's going nuts over that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. I think we need fluoride, but maybe not in the water. I'm not sure.
You know, it's funny, too. When people started having iodine deficiency, they started putting iodine in the salt. And now there's people who only want the all-natural salt. You need iodine in your body. You need fluoride to keep your teeth. You know, that's why the U.S., Canada, countries that put fluoride in water, we tend to have better teeth than countries that don't.
Yep.
But can you overdo anything? Yes.
Well, you know, it always helps if you eat healthy, I'd say.
Yes.
You can get your iodine and your fluoride. Well, I don't know if you have fluoride in food, but you can certainly get your iodine from good greens and things like that.
Mm. Now, you know, I ask you about the alien hybrids walk among us. Now, we had, not too long ago, professor at Temple University come on, David Jacobs, and he said he wrote a book about alien hybrids walk among us. What do you think about that?
Right. I don't believe it because, what did I say? What was my answer, by the way? Was it no?
You said no.
It was no.
Your answer was no.
Yeah. No. Aliens, there. I don't believe in aliens who fly spaceships and land on Earth and probe human beings. And,
there goes your dream of next Friday night, Sean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could find someone who claims they're an alien and wants to probe you, but that would be the same experience, really.
Wasn't there an X-Files like that? It was a hotel room.
I think there were several.
Yeah. They always put you in the X-Files, they put you in a chair that stuck hooks in your cheeks for some reason.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand that. JFK, yeah. Inside job, you said maybe, I think.
Oh, there's a very good book I'm going to mention here. I believe it's called Legacy of Ashes. It's this really thick book about the history of the CIA written by a guy who used to write for the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, granted, those papers are considered to be, you know, part of the conspiracy, usually.
Right.
But he pointed out that one of the reasons people think there's a conspiracy around the assassination of John F. Kennedy is because, again, like with Roswell, everybody was running around going, whoa, wait a minute, what the, and trying to sort of cover up things like, oh my God, if this was the Cubans and we were trying to kill Castro and that comes out, we're all going to look like horrible monsters. We've got to hide this fact, whether it's a fact or not.
Right.
So they were covering up things covering up stuff they didn't know what happened. They screwed themselves again.
Yeah.
So, Inside Job, I think Oswald did it, and I think the cover-up of stuff that didn't happen afterwards is the Inside Job. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, 9/11
now,
Inside
wait,
Job.
Wait, Sean, I've got to just go one more on that. So you're saying, I hear what you're saying on that, but was Lee Harvey the lone assassin, or do you think he was a patsy?
He was a nut job. He was a classic nut job. The FBI was watching him. He went to the Soviet Union. He got kicked out of the Soviet Union because he was a nut job. He was in Mexico City trying to get back into the Soviet Union, standing at the Russian embassy with a gun in his hand. He was crazy.
Yeah, he was a nut.
It was only a matter of time before he picked up a rifle and started shooting at somebody.
Yeah.
And he just happened to, you know, it happened to be the president.
Yeah.
All the crazy stuff started after it happened because the FBI had been following him and sort of like, well, he's crazy, but he's not dangerous. And then what do you know? He goes and shoots the president. That's what all this ass covering is for.
Yeah, I think so, too. A 9/11 inside job, everybody talks about explosives being used on the building, the way it collapsed and everything. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I have come from that from a special perspective, obviously, because the pilot of the Lone Gunman featured us preventing a jet plane from flying into the World Trade Center in a script that was written a full two years before September 11th itself. So I get very little patience with people say it was anything different.
Yeah,
the simplest explanation is these guys who got on the plane and flew it into the building.
These idiots.
It's the simplest explanation.
Yeah.
And Occam's razor usually works. It's...
That's right. Apply Occam's razor. It makes, why fly planes? It just blow the building up.
Right.
If you want to conspire, all you do is blow the building up and then blame it on foreign terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to add a plane flying in and killing a few extra hundred people.
Right. And then they pay taxi drivers and stuff to, you know, $500 to say they didn't see a plane. It was all CGI'd in. People are nuts on some things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, stuff like that, yeah.
The Men in Black, though. The Men in Black conspiracy has been around since before
us. You said maybe.
I said that I wouldn't be surprised if there are guys, you know, from the Secret Service wandering around asking people about things that, or had been anyway, when Project Blue Book was a thing.
Oh yeah,
there would have been guys walking around in suits asking weird questions and being weird, probably.
Right.
I don't doubt that.
You know, Sean and I have often had questions about government agencies and private agencies that have this kind of power. Since we have done shows where we were actually broadcasting stuff that was on the edge several years ago. And all of a sudden, you know, in an area where I never get this, I've got a black helicopter flying over my house.
You're going to get paranoid, too.
Yeah. And then we had an issue where we were covering, you know, a billionaire out of Utah who, you know, is very protective of his property. The next thing you know, I've got people driving up to my house who never come to my house. People from Utah showing up at my lodge.
Skinwalker Ranch, Bruce.
Yeah. And, you know, so... And then what was the last one, Sean, that
Bigelow Aerospace and all that.
Yeah, but we had the Bigelow, we had the people pulling up to my house, the black helicopters pulling up to your house and my house.
They weren't to my house. They didn't land.
Flying over. we had the KGB. We made the jokes about the KGB when we were talking to people in Russia. And our phone lines got cut.
Oh, yeah. Well, I certainly think you're definitely being listened to by the KGB.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I would not regard that as a conspiracy theory at all.
The KGB doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, well, whatever they call it, Putin is still around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, last one, guys. Time travel has happened. You all know the online videos and stuff of the lady holding the cell phones or the guy wearing a Motley Crue T-shirt in the middle of the Civil War. What do you think?
No, I said no. It's just not scientifically possible.
Yeah.
Now, but do you believe that it's not scientifically possible now and will never be scientifically possible?
I'm not trying to remember if I've heard some. I don't think it's scientifically possible. If there is a way of shifting things in time, that it will not be possible physically to move a human being any great. Something the size of a human being, any distance past or future, it's not possible. And I don't think time works that way either. So,
well, there you go.
You talk about Einstein physics and things like that. Time is not. People are confused about time as a measurement. I don't think it just doesn't work that way.
Bruce, are we alone in the universe?
Okay, special question. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't believe that there are aliens in spaceships who come here to probe us. Yeah. I have no doubt, and in fact my doubt is lessening as time goes by, that there is life out there in the universe as close as Mars, possibly Titan. It might be nothing more than bacteria, but I guarantee there is alien life out there somewhere.
See,
we've just recently discovered that we can have multicellular animals on Earth living 1,000 feet below the surface of the Earth. If that's possible, then it's not. It is impossible that there isn't something alive somewhere out there.
Where are they all?
And I wouldn't be surprised if there's any planet anywhere in the universe that has water or carbon or something like that will have living things on it. They may not be very elaborate, but I'm definitely sure that they're there.
Now, after the show, everybody will be on our Twitter feed and Facebook saying, Bruce knows stuff. He was hiding it on the show. Okay.
The more we learn about life on Earth, the more the plausibility factor ramps up for life somewhere else.
Right.
It's so tenacious. It's so amazing what life, the places life finds to live.
Yeah.
It's got to be on other planets. There's no way it can't be so.
Chris, I got to throw in there. I know we're out of time. We've kept you 13 minutes past the hour. Now, you have Chris Carter's ear. I know you do. Don't you think there's a place?
He's sitting right next to me drinking a martini.
How you doing, Chris? No.
Well, that's like when we had Max Brooks on, and at the end of the show, we said, tell your father, Mel Brooks, we love him. And he goes, oh, he's sitting right here. Yeah, we're like, what? The show's running out. No.
I was just saying, if there's ever a time that the lone gunmen do come back to the X-Files and they could use a couple funny comedy relief type radio show hosts that go out and look for X-Files type stuff to help, with your investigations, here we are, buddy.
Instead of a newspaper, they're running their underground podcast.
Yes. Well, that makes more sense than a newspaper, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, website podcast, that's what you should be doing.
Okay. It's easier, I tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce, what happens next for the great Bruce Harwood? What are you going to do? What's going on tonight? How are you going to celebrate?
I'm making a steak dinner. I'm going to sit down, make myself a martini, sit down and watch the show.
Is it a dirty martini?
No. No.
Vodka or gin?
I try to make it as dry as, I try to make it nice and dry.
Vodka or gin?
It's got to have gin.
Okay.
With an olive. Got to have vermouth in it. It's not a martini if there's not vermouth in it.
Put your little
I like what it, people say.
I like it to stare at an open bottle of vermouth for a little while.
No, I'm joking.
If
you want cold gin, put gin in a glass and put an ice cube in it.
I'm actually one of those guys who, when I make my martini, despite the dry martini jokes, I like to put a splash of vermouth in, swish it around the glass, put another splash in, pour the gin in, and that's my martini. But I've got to have olives, and I've got to drink it dirty.
Let me just try something on you then, real quick. Do you like it with a twist?
I do, and I'd like to every now and then throw just a touch of bitters in it.
Yeah, well, let me then try this old recipe. It's supposed to be the original martini recipe. It's two parts gin to one part dry vermouth, or sweet vermouth if you choose, and orange bitters, like seven or eight splashes. You know, stir that together in ice, pour it out, and then with a twist of lemon.
Orange bitters with a twist of lemon. I haven't tried orange bitters.
Yeah, it's sweet and citrusy.
See, right? There you go, folks. The lone gunman dry martini
martini
with a twist.
Nathan, don't drink it. Trust no one. You're going to trust Bruce? My God, he just gave you a concoction that could kill you, man. Anyway, Bruce, it's been awesome you coming on. Could you stay on the line 1 second while we pay the bills?
Sure thing.
Hey, Bruce, we got to ask. What can people expect from you, or where can they find you?
I'm going to be in an episode of The X-Files. I think episode 4. I don't know if it airs in the same order that they shot them in. So that's going to be February sometime, I guess.
So you don't even know?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Talk about conspiracies.
Uh-huh. Sure, Bruce.
Hey, with being a gunman, believe it or not, we are always the last to know.
Yeah, but before you go, laugh it up with your reptilian friends about your cover-up tonight on our show. Stay on the line 1 second. We're going to close out the show. Nathan, what do you say?
I say, did my voice go up a lot during this show, Sean?
Yes, it did. We sure are excited.
All right. I was excited. Let's pay the bills so I can try and
Bruce Harwood, everybody, John Byers from the smash hit, The X-Files and The Lone Gunman, and much, much more. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know. So check them out at actionaudioapps.com. Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, and Free Music Archives. Thanks for the tunes from the haunted back roads of America. This has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
That would be because we love you.
That's right, guys. Enjoy the premiere tonight. X-Files, rock it out, guys.
Good night, everybody.